this retro thing for what it is. Nostalgia goggles heavy on those things when we were kids. I've got the memories of falling while my hair's turning gray. I'm thinking back on all the things that were better yesterday. So for all those things nostalgic, I ask of you is to like this. So for all those things nostalgic, I ask of you is to like this.
All right, Kim, we have to summon this podcast episode. So say podcast episode with me three times.
Like just podcast episode? Okay,
podcast episode?
Podcast episode, podcast episode, podcast episode.
That's technically like five times because I think it in the mythology, different people can say it and it can stack up. So
I didn't know if you said, say, the episode of the podcast, which I didn't know, or just podcast episode.
I figured that was a clever way of people who didn't look at the episode title to be like, oh, I wonder if they're doing either Candyman or Beetlejuice.
Mm.
Candyman Urban Legends 3 Bloody Mary, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So the other day we saw a film. Mm-hmm. And before said film, I said, oh, I bet we're going to get the trailer for the new Beetlejuice. And then you made the mistake of saying that you'd never seen Beetlejuice. And 4 days later, here we are.
Was it a mistake? I think I've made a life
correction. That's why I put it in quotes, because I love Beetlejuice. So, And this to me is one of those known quantity episodes. But, you know, there's a legacy sequel coming out, so it seems insane. It's not out for a while, but it still seems insane not to go back and cover the original.
I wanted to open with I hated it to see how you would react.
I wouldn't have believed you though, because as I was rewatching it, I was like, I'm pretty sure she's gonna be into this.
I was into it like right even away. That's how quick it was.
I was like, even if she's not, she's gonna be really into Catherine O'Hara specifically,
who is a stunner in this film. She is gorgeous. Like,
yeah, I can't disagree beautiful. With that.
She's always gorgeous, but I don't think I've ever seen young Catherine O'Hara. So it's like, who is this woman?
Yes, you have. We watched all the Home Alone movies together.
But she's younger in this. She's younger in this.
2 years.
Okay. We should check that math.
I can run it real quick. Beetlejuice came out in 88. Home Alone came out in 90. 90 so, minus 88
so really
is 2.
The costume people they did their work in both movies then.
She's definitely mommed up more in Home Alone.
She's
a very conservative mom.
Yeah,
yeah, like, she's a mom here too, but she's like the glamorous mom.
The stepmom.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as she had her freak out at her husband about designing the house, I was like, oh, Kim's going to like this movie.
So. I loved it. That part like, too, fine. I was like, I'm 1000% a part of this movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I mean, your side is this was your first viewing. I was way into the cartoon, I think, before I even saw the movie.
I had no idea there was like more to Beetlejuice than the movie.
So the 90s were a glorious time, Kim. Everything got a cartoon.
Mm.
And we've talked a bit about it on a few episodes because we did the MC Hammer cartoon and we did the cartoon where Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, and Bo Jackson team up to fight robots and crime. So if your movie did well, you got a cartoon. And there's the obvious ones like, oh, when you see that Bill and Ted had a cartoon, you're like, yeah, I can see that. Oh, Back to the Future had a cartoon. That makes sense. Beetlejuice, I would say, is somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Like, I get like Beetlejuice in the show is good. Like he and Lydia are buddies. It's a very different fictional through line.
Okay. This is having known nothing, I assumed two things that were very wrong about this movie. Beetlejuice was a misunderstood villain and was actually quite nice the whole time. And that this was like an explicit horror movie.
No, I mean, it feels like good gateway horror. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, sure I saw it. Like, I watched the cartoon and I would have to say it was probably my brother who was like, well, do you want to watch the cartoon? Do you want to watch the movie it's based on? And all I remember is the sandworm and the snake scared the shit out of me.
The snake There were too many snakes. That's my criticism of the movie, and I'm terrified of them. So yeah, that when that moment with the snake happened, I was not okay. The worm I was fine with because it was very Tim Burton cartoonish. But there's a moment where Beetlejuice hands somebody like a handful of snakes. Not for me.
I was just going to look up because this is also one of those movies where I would guess Beetlejuice as an entity is probably only in the movie for 15 minutes.
It would have been one day of shooting, I would imagine.
Which is one of those impressive things where, like Silence of the Lambs, where they're so good, you walk away and you're like, man, they were, and then you sit down and realize, oh, they're barely in the movie. They just make such a huge impression while they're there.
I haven't seen Silence of the Lambs. Is this Anthony
Hopkins? All right, shut this episode down. That has to go, we have to go do that one first. Really?
I haven't seen it. I've always been way too afraid to watch that movie, but Jodie Foster's in it, right?
So. Exactly. And you seem like you're way into Jodie Foster. So
I am. Is that the vibe I give to the world?
You have huge Jodie Foster stan vibes.
I'm okay with that.
Just radiating off of you. You have someone, yeah, you'd be like, oh man, Flight Plan? Love Flight Plan.
I actually haven't seen very many of her movies, but I did rush to Niad.
So just as a person then, you just like Jodie Foster as like a human.
Oh, she's a human who I want to become, but she's too strong and independent and like fully stable. And I'm like quite chaotic and emotional and I know nothing about anything.
Maybe she just puts on a very good front.
No, I think she really is just like a superhero person who has no fears. Perfect.
I was gonna say, what is Jodie Foster up to these days? I don't remember the last
time. She did Niad.
Not see that.
Oh, she's a bombshell in that movie.
I feel like she's also one of those like Nicole Kidman and Annette Bening. I guess Annette Bening was in the same movie, but who just has like maybe a show I've never heard of running on Crave or something.
She does have a show on Crave. Where well, she plays has, like oh, she a has detective.
True Detective. Okay, yeah. Well, that's not. I know what True Detective is. Okay, never mind.
I really want to watch it, but I don't have Crave, so.
Okay, and yeah, okay. I've actually seen a couple of her recent out, but she took a pretty long break. She did Elysium and then nothing for like 5 or 6 years. So.
Well, I think because, like, she came out as gay at an award show, and she gave this speech that was kind of muddled, and then Hollywood did that thing where they're like, "We don't like you anymore." And so I think it took a bit of time to come back.
Oh, 14 and a half minutes is how long Beetlejuice is actually in the movie. So
amazing.
It was very close. It was also apparently when Netflix was a DVD mailing service, if you remember those days, where they would put discs in the mail and send them to you.
And when you say male, you mean, no, I'm just kidding.
Like, not like dudes with an I.
Oh.
Like when you get letters and shit.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Transportation.
Like, yeah. We used to be able to hold things in our hands and go, I don't want to pay you this amount of money. And maybe you could just pretend you never got it. Now that's harder.
Okay.
So this was the first DVD they ever sent out when they were a DVD mailing company. The first day, the first person put Beetlejuice in an envelope, sent it out into the world. And apparently the last, because I read that and I had to know what the last one was True Grit. The 2010 remake of True Grit. So there you go. That's what people come here for. Hot Netflix DVD trivia.
There should be a trivia night based off of this podcast.
There should be.
Yeah. Who's going to organize it?
Not me.
Well, this is a question going out to the audience.
I have to do this stupid podcast. I don't have time for that. I'm out here. Actually, I'm surprised Beetlejuice is a very short movie. In my head, it's always a little bit longer, but this thing gets in and gets it done in less than 90 minutes.
I really appreciated that. And that was one of the comments I had, like right at the beginning. They don't waste time. Like the characters don't waste time figuring things out. They just get to what they need to know to move forward.
Yep.
And I like that.
I guess we should talk about the story, even though it's one of those most people probably know it.
Why would we talk about this movie plot?
So you got Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis.
Had no clue either one of those were in this.
Oh man, you must have been psyched to see Gina Davis. It's always exciting to see Gina Davis.
Another beautiful woman who I love and adore. But Alec Baldwin, I don't think I would have known that was him if I didn't first see his name in the credits at the beginning.
I guess we'll never know.
He's very different.
He is very different. He
carries himself very different in this performance.
Yeah,
so.
He's a dork in this movie, which we're not used to. We're used to Alec That's Baldwin true. Kicking in the door and being like, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Alec Baldwin. That's what he always says. That's his catchphrase.
Look at me, I'm Alec Baldwin.
Look at me, I'm Alec Baldwin. Yeah, so they're a married couple, and they are victims to the standard movie. This married couple is way, way too happy, so something bad is obviously going to befall them in the openness of this movie. Since they're just a little, just like, let's go to the hardware store together, and he's literally like happy running to the car because they're going to the hardware store together. It's like, oh, some raw shit's going to go down. And it does. They crash their car into like a quaint small town, one of them small town bridges that has like a little Wes Anderson ass building around it. One of those bridges, you know.
A covered bridge, I think is what it's called.
My terminology was better. And then they die, and then that's then we're off and running.
Yeah, a puppy kills them.
A puppy kills them.
They're trying not to run over a puppy, and then they crash, and then the puppy standing on the board that's holding them on the bridge, and then he walks off and they fall into the water and die, which I thought they wouldn't, because they seemed both of their windows were open. They could have easily just gone out the window.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say for sure, but
I am, but I'm not that kind of doctor.
Then I guess you have to be right. Yeah, I feel like that bit is a pretty good indication of the tone of the movie, where the subject matter and a lot of what's happening is very dark, but the movie doesn't necessarily make jokes. Like, it's a very dark comedy in places, but they balance out the darker subject matter with just a general lighter touch and a general, I would say, almost aloofness. Like, the characters aren't reacting to the situations outside of a couple of examples with, like, sadness and horror. Everyone's just, like, very accepting of what's happening around them, and that helps keep things a little lighter in tone.
Yeah.
Like, when they first discover they're dead, it's not like, oh my god, how can this happen? It's just, okay, now what? Like, let's figure this out.
I really appreciated that part, because it just, they come home and there's like little cues to suggest something's off. And the way that whole little bit was structured was quite nice. And then they come to that realization and they find the book, and I'm like, god damn this. And it's not like they're sad. It's just, they're making fun of the fact that they're dead and this might be heaven. Like, it's very clever, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to handle it without it. Because, you know, they're good people, so it could be a very sad start to the movie. So it's a very, very tricky line to walk, I would imagine, as someone who does not write movies, to keep, you know, how do we keep a jovial tone to this happy married couple is dead.
Was this like pitched, you know, as like a kid's movie, or was it supposed to be?
I mean, at one point, Michael Keaton says, nice fucking model, and grabs his crotch, and a honk honk noise plays.
His character is disgusting.
Yeah. But I will add that there are cuts of the movie, and I think maybe when they put it on VHS, there was a whole thing around that line, and there are certain versions of the movie that cut that line. And do try and make it more of a kid's movie, I'm guessing, because a lot of kids followed my route, watched the cartoon and went, I love this. And then someone went, do you want to watch the very, very different movie? And we were all like, how come Beetlejuice is so mad at everybody? But in the show, he's so fun and nice.
And that's when your childhood innocence was lost.
Yep, that exact moment. Oh, where do we go from there? Yeah, they're dead. Catherine O'Hara, the dude, the principal from Ferris Bueller, and Winona Ryder all move into the house.
Oh, that's where that guy's from.
Yeah.
Okay.
The parents are waspy, rich, I don't want to say assholes. Like, they're not great people, but they're not the villains of the movie.
They're unlikable human beings, but likable characters. They're just very much, I think they're just all selfish. I think that's it.
They're all selfish, but like, even later, there's a bit where they're clearly doing a bad thing with the spirits of Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis, and they're not, like, they don't feel good about it. Like, there's never, we're gonna get rid of these ghosts and we're gonna do it. Like, there's,
they just want to make money off of it. But when they get to that part where they actually end up hurting them, it's just the interior decorator guy who does it. Like, nobody knows what's about to happen at that moment.
Yeah, they aren't vindictive. They aren't terrific parents by any means. But again, a bit of a surprise with maybe how those characters are handled, because they could very easily have been the villains of the piece.
I was just surprised there were people who were alive in the movie. Again, I assumed Beetlejuice was just about dead folk, and that was it. It's
often about dead folk. Very frequently about dead folks. So yeah, they move into Alec and Gina's house, and they're not cool with it because they, you know, put a lot of time into that house, and these people are showing up and going, we want weird ass sculptures and all this stuff in our house. So they want to get rid of them, are not successful, and that's where Beetlejuice comes in.
They
are basically tricked into freeing Beetlejuice because he's like, oh, I can get rid of them for you.
So what's the deal with Beetlejuice? You say his name three times and he's able to like roam space that he's not usually able to roam.
Yeah.
And then you say his name three more times and he gets
goes
cast
back.
Oh, okay. That wasn't clear to me at first. So I was like, what's happening? Why is he locked away again?
Yeah, it just seems like the next step to anything with him is to just say his name three times. If you want him to show up, if you want him to go away, it all seems to be the same. And that's only my one, you know, critique, and it's one of those dumb critiques where it's barely a critique, is in the final act when they're all desperately trying to say his name three times to make him go away.
Oh,
and they all
yeah.
make a big show every time they manage to get one out. Instead of just going, Beetlejuice, 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 they're all like, Beetlejuice! And then he does something so they can't say it again, and then someone else shows up and is like, Beetlejuice! Like, just say it three times really fucking fast.
I think it was because that whole scene was so chaotic. Like, Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice is outstanding. That performance is wonderful.
He's so good. He's on the record as to saying, like, it's his favorite role. He's apparently improvised, according to IMDb, 90% of what he's saying, which, yes, I can 100% believe they just said go.
Yeah, he definitely committed. Like, when he shows up, and something that he does is that he throws himself on his back and puts both his legs up and starts like gyrating. I'm like, this guy is gonna give me a show throughout this movie.
Yeah,
I love it.
Keaton handles it well because Beetlejuice could be a very annoying character in the wrong hands. Like, you're not supposed to like Beetle. Again, it's what you said. You're not supposed to like him, but like, you want to like the character, and you want to be happy when that character is here. And I feel like, again, very fine line of Beetlejuice needs to be annoying and hyper. And like, immediately when they meet him, they're like, oh, this was a mistake. We got to get the fuck out of here. This guy is, I can't deal with this.
I had to turn away.
But not in a way that you're like, oh my God, I don't want to spend more time with Beetlejuice. So kudos to Keaton. I give all the credit to him for that.
And the costuming too. Whoever did like his facial makeup, like, he just looked gross. And then he starts spitting and gagging, and I was like, I can't handle this dude.
That's one of my favorite lines in the movie, is when he just spits in his jacket and goes, save that one for later.
Oh my, that
was
the part
where
I turned away. Yeah, and because he kisses Gina Davis at that point, and I'm like, it all needs to stop.
Yeah, that bit's great. There's a bit where he's luring a fly with a Zugnut bar that's real good.
I walked away to get a bowl of cheesies at that point, so I missed a little bit of there.
That's as good a reason as any to walk away, so it's fine. And just yesterday, they screened, I forget where, there was CinemaCon, maybe? There was like a convention where studios showed up and showed footage of their new movies. Apparently they dropped a bigger look at the new Beetlejuice. And the two things that have been made clear are Michael Keaton is full Michael Keaton again. Like, they're not toning that character down. Like, oh, he hasn't lost a step. And two, it's all practical, which is a huge part of this movie.
So what do you mean said, practical?
Like, no, like, we did it all with computers. Like, no, we're going to do it with costumes and stop motion animation. Like, apparently the sandworms are going to be done the same way they did them in this movie. Just stop motion. They're not going to CG them. Which lends, because this movie is Tim Burton cranked up to 11. Like, every single moment of this movie is just so original and full of, like, insane visuals. Like, always, constantly
something. It's very Tim Burton-esque. And I think that's why it works so well with such dark humor, but also a light coating to it. Because for me, it got real dark when, what were their names? Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, Barb and Adam.
That sounds right. All I know for sure is Lydia.
Okay. Is that?
That's Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder, yeah.
And that's just again, because of the cartoon, because I think he always called her Lids.
Oh, okay. But when they have a question about being dead, so they go into the waiting room with all these other dead people, and that is so dark. Like, you have a guy who's, like, hanging, because I guess that's how he killed himself. He hung himself, and he's just moving across the ceiling, like, filing papers in this, like, business room for people who accept the clientele of the dead who have questions. Whoever plays that Juno woman, I looked her up. I don't know her, but she's had a long career in cinema. She was wonderful.
Yeah, Juno's their caseworker.
Oh my God, she is like, she's extraordinary.
And was Beetlejuice's former partner, and the one who says, "You absolutely do not summon Beetlejuice."
Even that line though is so, like, you can tell they're not wasting time with anything, because she says that, and then Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis walk away, and they're like, "You know what? We got to do it. We were told not to, but we have no choice." And I just love all of that. There's no clunky bits in this movie, except for what you were saying at the end, where they have to say his name three more times,
which barely bothers me, because again, you get lots of, like, creative ways that he's stopping them from saying his name. So it's like, I can't be mad, because then I wouldn't get him fastball pitching a steel plate over Gina Davis's mouth, or like literally zipping it shut, and Alec Baldwin's discarded teeth bouncing around on the ground.
Oh yeah, like, that was all really, really gross. And there is another gross moment where they have to change their faces, and like, he has all of, like, his eyeballs and his fingers. That, I was nauseous watching that, because it's not CGI or anything. They're actually creating fabric to look like skin that's being pulled, and I was so grossed out.
It's just so good. Like, that, it's like I said, it's just nonstop something interesting visually to look at. Like, really good character designs, like you said, in the afterlife waiting room area. Like, a dude comes out to call, like, to say their next, and he's just a flat guy who clearly got run over by a truck or something.
But has the best dad joke of all time.
Oh, you might have to remind me what it was.
Because he's just like, he looks squashed, and he's moving in that sort of way, and he's like, "You guys, how do I look?" And they're like, good, yeah, it's good. And he's like, "Oh, because I'm feeling a little flat." And then he just laughs.
Again, nice little way to handle the tone. And back to your point of everything runs smooth, which is doubly impressive, because there is kind of a lot to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once they die, then you have to get into, okay, so here's how death works, and here's this afterlife, and here's who Beetlejuice is, and here's how that bit works, and I'm your caseworker, and this, and here's this. But it never feels like someone sitting you down and going, okay, let's lay out, like, it flows in a way that feels very natural. It doesn't have that, like, oh, you don't know about Beetlejuice? Oh, let me tell you about Beetlejuice. As you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You know that that's all written out in their handbook, though. But, like, the ongoing joke in the movie, which I also thought was such a nice touch, is that nobody's reading this handbook, because there's so much instruction in it. And so we as viewers are only learning what should be in the handbook by all the mistakes that they're making, which is a very human thing to do. Nobody's going to read a handbook about anything.
Yeah, well, they try, but they say like it just doesn't make any sense. Like they keep saying,
well, they say it
reads
like
stereo instructions.
That's what it is. And I super adore that, because you could, like, it's just such a visceral way to understand how that book is written. It's like, goddamn, nobody's going to read that then. It's so stale.
One of the few things that dates the movie, because I would again say this is a very timeless movie. The only two things I noticed were it reads like stereo instructions, and at the start, they're listening to music on a cassette. Other than that, you could take this movie, and I think that's kind of a Tim Burton thing, in all honesty, but it's just like, this could take place anytime. There's nothing here that makes you go, ah, 80s.
Yeah, no, I thought initially it was like a 90s movie, but I guess it's 88, so it's kind of on the cuspy. Cusp. But like, because the whole opening for me had that like nostalgic 90s feel of getting the shot that kind of hovers over the town, and then it like it gets to more specific detail, and then it lands in like this image of a home. I was like, God damn, I miss when movies started this way. Like, it's the same with Hocus Pocus. Like, you're introduced to the town first, and then you feel a part of it, and then you start getting introduced to all the characters there.
And we get that amazing main theme by Danny Elfman, which is, for me, an all-timer, the Beetlejuice theme song.
Oh, yeah. So, again, not having known anything about this movie except that it existed, when I heard that song, I was like, I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's very famous for very obvious reasons. And, I mean, it was the cartoon opening, so that's where I mostly know it from.
I also deeply appreciate it. I think now if you tried to do the dinner scene where they all break out into song, if you tried to do that now in any movie, it would not work. But it seems so seamlessly integrated into that moment. And then everybody starts having fun.
Yeah, that's another touch that I like. And it's something a lot of, like, Poltergeist does it too. The idea that when the couple or the family first discovers ghosts, there's a little bit of, oh, this is cool. And Poltergeist does it because there's a bit at the beginning before the Poltergeist reveal we're dicks, where the family is just kind of messing around and like, oh, if I put an object here, it gets slid, like it slides across the floor on its own. Isn't that wild? So I like that in this, after they all get possessed and dance around to Deo, they're like, that was fucking cool.
I love how they have a list of karaoke songs they want to do next.
I like that too. And again, it keeps it all. Everyone's even this, like, the snake is meant to be the scene where things go too far, because Lydia can actually see Gina and Alec and kind of befriends them. So that moment to her, when they are like, no, we need to get Beetlejuice in here because our Deo thing didn't work and the family is more comfortable here than ever. Beetlejuice goes too far with it, turns into a giant snake, like,
yeah,
chucks and tosses the dad around and just terrifies Lydia. So at that point, that's supposed to be the moment of like, oh no, this is the horror moment because they've gone too far.
Would Gina Davis have had a career by then? Because I think casting her as the nice ghost was very clever. Because it's her. Like, she's so wonderful and lovely.
Let me see. I associate her more with the 90s, but that could just be because I didn't see her known 80s stuff.
Oh, she would have. Wait, no, Thelma and Louise would have been the 90s.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, that's the stuff I'm thinking of. Like, A League of Their Own, Thelma and Louise. That's all the 90s. Long Kiss Night.
I just rewatched that too not that long ago, and it's still a solid film.
Let's see. In the 80s, what did she have going? All right. So she was in, oh, The Fly. I guess I should have gotten that one, but yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Not much else. Like, Earth Girls Are Easy, which is like early Jim Carrey. And then, yeah, then the 90s, it really gets going for her. So, like,
okay.
To answer your question, I will say kind of. Like, she's coming, at that point, she was coming off of The Fly, which is very well regarded. So,
she was doing okay. Catherine O'Hara, I would, like, that's such a good casting moment for me, too, because she's a comedian. So we dislike her in the movie, but we know she's not evil. And she plays it so well that you never fully hate her. So I didn't know if, like, maybe Gina Davis was, like, a was cast in that role because we really needed everybody to like that ghost.
Would very well be.
Call up Tim Burton.
I'll see if I can get him.
Bring him into the Zoom call.
He's done filming the new Beetlejuice, so he might be happy to come talk about it.
Where do you think that's going to go?
What?
The new Beetlejuice.
The new Beetlejuice?
Because I feel like they sum up this one pretty, like, it's a solid finish. No?
I think, well, I mean, in the end, he's in the waiting room and his number is like super, super, super far away. So
which
I
is
think
extraordinary again.
You have the most natural beginning ever, right? Because it's now 36 years later. Just his number gets called. Done.
But I like, but then like Catherine O'Hara is coming back. Like,
well, they definitely are going, based on the teaser trailer, back to that original house.
Yeah.
Because they find the model, and then the teaser trailer is, we have to assume Jenna Ortega is the Lydia's daughter, that she summons Beetlejuice, because Lydia is standing in horror as Beetlejuice comes back. My concern is that they'll try and like soften Beetlejuice up.
That's what I think they're gonna do.
Which I really hope they don't. Like, he's gonna come back and be like, oh, I've learned the error of my way. He's like, no, I really just want Beetlejuice to be Beetlejuice again.
I truly hope that's his first line, and then he does not change whatsoever.
Well, maybe that is the movie, because this one, he spends a lot of it trying to convince the two of them, like, I'm on your side. I'm here to help. And absolutely no, he's not. So you could go that route again. I don't know. Maybe he has to team up with Lydia for some other problem. I don't know, but that's the biggest concern I have, is that they're going to be like, what if Beetlejuice is a nice guy now? It's like, I should want that because of the cartoon. I should want them to just do an episode of the cartoon where they're buddies and they go on adventures, but I don't know. After the new Ghostbusters, maybe just making a live action episode of the cartoon isn't the way to go.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of over that trope, because Disney tried to do it a bunch, to recast the villain as the nice person who was just misunderstood in a bunch of stuff. Like, that's what Maleficent was doing.
That's what Wicked is.
Yeah.
Which has a big theater thing coming.
I think we've overdone that.
Yeah.
I just want
Beetlejuice
a villain.
Just come back and be an asshole. Like,
I want an asshole. Yeah.
Please don't make him come back and go like, oh, I've had a lot of time to think about it. It's like, no, just have him come back and rip snakes out of his face,
or whatever you need to do. We could leave the snakes behind. We don't need any more of those.
Like, that's what I want to. That's all I really need in the second Beetlejuice, is Michael Keaton having the greatest time.
Yeah.
With the same character who doesn't need a good guy arc, and just that nonstop delightful feast of cool practical effects. Like, where at one point, like, he comes out and he has a hat that's a carousel, and he turns his arms into hammers so he can use them to like, two people are on one of those strongman bell things and he hits them off into the ceiling, like, just stuff
presumably
like that.
Killing them too,
presumably killing them, because we do not see them again.
But I think that's the most refreshing thing about the movie for me, is that so many of the characters are unlikable. Maybe Gina Davis is the only one who I truly like, but Alec Baldwin's annoying. He's mean to that woman trying to sell the house at the beginning. Like, everybody's kind of a dick in this movie.
Lydia's fine. She's just like,
she's kind of a dick to her mom. Like, she's not the most likable person, but she's kind of neutral in this group of people for me.
She's just pretty standard gothy teenager.
Yeah.
No one understands me. If she had MSN, her status would definitely be the lyrics to My Chemical Romance songs.
Maybe that's what it is. If I had watched this at that phase in my life, I'd be like, yeah, she's wonderful, I love her so much. But now, as an adult, I'm like, oh, squirmy, that was
yeah,
me.
I bet a lot of girls probably were like, oh, I'm such a Lydia.
And they start going to dinner wearing like one of those like mourning veils that you would wear at a funeral.
Probably.
My whole life is darkness. What did she say? It was such a line that made me cringy.
Yeah, when they're talking, like, how come you can see us and no one else can? And she's like, oh, I read the handbook and it says that like people tend to overlook the dark and the weird, whereas I myself am dark and weird. Something very much along those lines.
And I'm like, oh, too adolescent-y, youthful. I'm beyond that.
Yeah. It was a recent episode where I talked about my old live journal and how, like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm the same person who once wrote that stuff. Like, it just makes me so mad now.
It's like going back to your Facebook statuses from 2008 and you're like, please stop. Even though that's kind of a long time ago.
It's still a pretty long time ago.
Yeah.
16 years, it turns out.
Yeah. And nobody needs to keep any record of who they were as a youth.
No. Everything we ever did until we were about 30 was the most embarrassing shit on the planet. So.
Well, it's just like adolescent years that could go to waste because we're all dealing with shit at that point. But cutesy kid embarrassments can still stick around.
That's fine. Yeah. And in fairness, we weren't all dealing with a Beetlejuice. So that's a very different level of problem.
True.
Oh, God, it's a tricky one. I don't know if I have that much more to say about it necessarily. Like, it's not I don't view it as a fall down hysterical comedy. There's a lot of very funny parts, but for me, it's just such a feast for the eyes, like just such an original piece of film. It's just a goddamn delight. It's like 87 minutes and it's just a roller coaster the entire time.
It's funny too, like, because as I was watching it, like, I've seen a lot of Tim Burton stuff, but when looking at this movie, I was like, ooh, this must have been like early Tim Burton when he just had his characters in development. Because I had seen, like, you see some of these guys in other Tim Burton movies, but it was kind of like you were seeing the original sketch, like, finally getting its performance off the page in this movie. And I like that.
Yeah, it's creature and character design is top notch. Like,
yeah,
so good.
Was Helena Bonham Carter in it for like a second?
I don't think so.
It cut like, and I, because it stood out as very random to me.
I can see if she's credited.
Please do, because I couldn't find it anywhere.
Well, that leads me to believe that she's not. So I think we have our answer.
But there was this one, it was like a tiny, less than 5 second scene. And it's when Barb and Adam, they go visit Juno for the first time, their caseworker. And they cut to this random woman who has no lines. And she's just working a desk in this afterlife place. And it looks so much like her. And then it cuts away. And I'm like, what was the purpose of having that woman right there? But
she has no credited roles in 88, I'm afraid.
Well, then I think maybe she just didn't get credited because it was so tiny.
I feel like at this
I am not in the wrong here.
Like, I don't know if this is the hill to die on, but...
Oh, no. I was just curious because I'm like, oh, that kind of looks like her, but... And was it isn't like she known for being in most of his movies?
She's definitely, yes. I don't know if is it Tim Burton or Johnny Depp? I guess they all kind of have that circle.
Yeah, they all come together.
Helena Bonham Carter in Beetlejuice.
For a split second.
No.
I'm going to rewatch it and find that and take a picture and send it to you.
Just a lot of people talking about how Jenna Ortega is the new Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, I don't believe that, but okay.
Well, just in that she's probably going to start appearing in all of the Tim Burton stuff because they just did Wednesday and now Beetlejuice.
Oh.
Which, have we talked about what the sequel is called and how it's perfect?
Mm-mm.
It's called Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
And so I think they're making a third one?
They kind of have to, right? But
no, they have to make six because you say it three times, then you have to send them back. You gotta send them back.
That's true. Yeah, as soon as they were like, "It's Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice," I don't even think I saw any people go, "That's dumb." Everyone seemed to unanimously agree, "Yes, that is perfect." Because not too long ago, there was a big news story that because they're making a legacy sequel to Gladiator this year too.
Oh God.
And there was a big the story that was like the title of the second Gladiator movie has been revealed, and I clicked on it and it's called Gladiator 2. Like, of course it is. So at least this is something.
At least give us like a back in the habit, like yes. clever line.
I don't know what it would be. I haven't seen Gladiator since I saw Gladiator in the movie theater like 2 decades ago, but probably a time to do a Gladiator episode coming up.
Is this what happens when you get old? Like you just realize that every movie that exists is based off of something you saw as a kid? Or is that just like a 90s millennial thing we're experiencing?
Well, I think they really are just going back to everything we had when we grew up and going, another one of those, please. So,
but was that like our parents going, well, I don't know. They probably didn't watch a lot of movies when they were kids. Was going to the cinema cool with our folks?
Wait, what do you mean? Like, did our parents go to the movies?
Yeah, like as kids. And then when they were adults taking us to the movies, they're like, we're just watching the same stuff again. That's not how my parents sound.
I mean, maybe somewhat. For some reason, my brain first went to, they did that live action Flintstones movie in the early 90s.
Oh, that's
so there probably was some level of just like, wow, really? The fucking Flintstones still?
Maybe it happened more with music. Because I do remember as like a kid listening to covers and my dad going, the original is better.
I mean, yes, that's definitely for sure us now. But the problem is you don't even have to wait that long for the movie covers or remakes, as they say in the industry, to show up. They're so fast.
I know. And I'm not
like, we're not even mining the old shit anymore. It's like, there's stuff that I had an example and I just lost it. I mean, in fairness, a lot of it is also because
there's a
lack of confidence that people will watch anything with subtitles. So when pretty much just, I think this is maybe exclusive to horror, when a horror movie does well, but it's not in English, well, we need to just make it again here. Like there's a movie called Speak No Evil that came out literally 2 years ago. I honestly feel bad. I don't remember what country it's from, but like James McAvoy is in an American remake. This movie's 2 years old purely just because we won't read the words on a screen.
So it really comes down to who's going to pay for what. And there's a lot of nostalgic millennials out there.
I mean, we're all getting old. We're just looking like, oh, I remember Ghostbusters. There's a new one? Perfect. And I'm not even against legacy sequels. I know there's a general, like, all of them have been bad. I don't agree with that.
I enjoy it once in a while. I just don't like it all the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think everything needs to come back. I think it's finding that the reason to do it. Like if you're just doing another one so you can, and I like the new Ghostbusters movie, but they're certainly guilty of that, the new one especially, of just going like, yeah, of course I want to see Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, but you really don't need to do, oh, here's the library ghost again. It's like, yeah. Okay, yeah, I remember, like, so just give me a reason. Like the third Bill and Ted, I think, did a really good job of, here's like, this is a story that was worth telling. And it's not just going to be like, yes, we're bringing back the characters you remember, but it's not just going to be, remember in the second movie when this happens? Like, I do. I saw that movie. you do not need to do it again. So I hope the second Beetlejuice justifies its own existence.
Yeah, I am getting a little bit tired of seeing the same. You go to see a sequel and you're just watching like the same, remember this scene from the old one? Because like the Ghostbusters, the one with the SNL women, it shouldn't have been made because I think they deserve their own movie with their own plot and characters. But that movie took a lot of heat for just being like, oh, we have this green guy again. Remember when this happened? And now we're getting literally another Ghostbusters movie that's going to be doing that stuff.
Here's Slimer. Y'all remember Slimer? It's like,
Yeah.
I do. But what can they do? Because then you make a new Ghostbusters movie and you don't put Slimer in it. You have an equally vocal side of the audience going, What the fuck? Why is Slimer not in this movie? I came to see this is Ghostbusters. You got to put Slimer in the movie.
I
So.
think let those people do what they're going to do online, and then you're getting a promotion, or you're getting people technically promoting a movie because people are like, oh, then what are they doing? And now they have to go see the movie rather than be like, oh, Slimer's in it. I love this part. And people are going to be like, I've already seen Slimer before. I don't want to go back to the movies.
Yeah, just don't make it a checklist of like, what do we have? We have, yes, Slimer's there. And yes, this is there. Like, we ticked all the boxes. That's all we needed to do. Like,
Ghost, check. Slimer, check.
Bustin', check.
Feeling good?
People feeling good about
Double
Bustin',
check.
check, check.
Think we just
Dan
wrote.
Aykroyd having sex with a ghost? Unfortunately, X.
Big old nope, that won't fly.
There was a post on, I forget where I saw it, about the new Ghostbusters movie and how they brought their 6 or 7 year old and they were so outraged. Like, oh, at one point someone says shit and then someone makes a sex, is like a sex dungeon joke. The original wasn't like this. It's like a ghost undoes Dan Aykroyd's pants and goes down on him in the original Ghostbusters. The fuck are you talking about? The only thing is, I guess you can explain away that to a kid pretty easily. Like, what
Also,
was happening there? Oh, Dan Aykroyd was so excited to see a ghost, he passed out. Why were his pants coming off? So he could be comfortable.
he was hot sleeping.
It's hot in New York in the summer and he couldn't sleep.
But also, every single one of Bill Murray's lines is sexualized.
It's all
And
that movie is him trying to sleep with Sigourney Weaver.
you also have the receptionist who gets really horny in the second one.
Yep. And the second one is actually intended for kids. So,
And there's a
like, but
huge
all that
makeout
her
set
arc in that
session.
movie is just like, let's get a baby going.
Oof, man, people need to go back and understand what they're watching.
Yeah. Like, no, you can't. And like a ton of people were agreeing. It's like, none of you have seen the original movie recently, then. Like, you are lying. Stop it.
Or they just really didn't understand.
Or yes, exactly. Maybe they did think Dan Aykroyd was taking his pants off because he was hot.
And I think that's more terrifying.
And the ghost was just like, let me help, you're tired.
Let me keep going down on you. Cuz isn't that what's like she's honestly like she's standing at one end of the bed and then
She's
she kind of
floating
goes
above
in.
him and then disappears, and then his pants come off, and then he like his eyes roll back in his head and he's all happy looking.
And he fully uncrosses one leg
Like,
like
there's no way you can look at that and go, Unless you're this person who posted on Facebook, apparently.
I would be so afraid of that post.
In conclusion, legacy sequels are fine. I'm not opposed to them. If they're characters I liked before, I'm up to seeing what they're up to now. Just, yeah, ex just don't make it. Here they are again, doing the same thing, saying all the same jokes and lines you remember.
It's tough though because I remember seeing, and we can move beyond this because this really
I mean, I don't have anything more to say
is.
about Beetlejuice, so.
When I went to see the newest, the like of the trilogy, of the Halloween movies that Jamie Lee Curtis was a part of,
Halloween ends.
but was that the first one of the series?
No, it was Halloween, Halloween Kills, and then
And
Halloween ends.
because the first one, Halloween. I remember I hadn't seen the original. I think I just saw it right before. No, I hadn't seen it. I went to see this one and then I saw the original after. But I remember being in like a packed cinema and there's that one moment where Mike Myers takes a knife and stabs somebody to the wall and just like the ruckus in like the cinema house where everybody starts clapping and like woo-wooing
He
to
did the
it.
thing.
I was like, this is like a sentimental touch that we need in these sequels and remakes, but you only need like one or two. Like you don't need it
Yes.
consistently. Like it kind of is a good feeling to know, like, oh, he's gonna do the thing, and then he does it, and you're like, yes, he did it. But you don't need the whole plot of the movie to be just a callback to something that happened.
Completely agree. One or two moments, totally fine.
And I think that was the best moment. Stabbing somebody and hanging them on the wall with the knife.
And even just typing into Google best legacy sequels, they reminded me of Creed. And I feel like Creed is just the end. Like, that's the, if I were a lawyer and I came in to defend legacy sequels, I would just slap a copy of Creed down on the table and go, no further comments, Your Honor. And I would walk out.
Then you would lose that case.
I don't think so. I would never know because I left.
Oh, I think there's this thing called email and follow-up phone calls.
No, I don't think so. I'd run back in with a Top Gun Maverick and be like, yes, too. And then I'd be done.
Yeah, no, that was good. I like that. But I still haven't seen the original of that.
And Good Burger, too.
Good Burger. Don't know it.
I can't fault you for that. You're Kenan Thompson Nickelodeon comedy from the 90s that they just legacy sequeled.
Oh, okay. That was because they had brought it back for a sketch on SNL, right? And people went crazy.
Shrug. I don't know.
Okay.
That might be Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was very, like, I've been wrong before watching stuff where I'm like, oh, I think Kim's going to be into this. And then we'll sit down and you'll go, stop feeding me garbage. And I'll be surprised.
No, I truly loved it. It was super refreshing, super unique. Despite it existing in the world and people talking about it forever, I still had no spoilers.
Which is cool. Like, it's really neat that you were like, Beetlejuice is the bad guy?
Yeah, and weird. Like, these are the people in the movie. Like, I knew Winona Ryder, and recently I found out Catherine O'Hara was in it, but then I didn't know about Gina Davis or Alec Baldwin.
It's a hell of a cast. Even now. Not cast, even just for the 80s. It's a hell of a cast now.
And even with, like, the Tim Burton headache, where you're like, because we went through a stretch in the 2000s where he was, like, producing a lot.
Yeah, like, I feel like Alice in Wonderland was maybe kind of the beginning of his, hopefully, this is his resurgence. I honestly wasn't that into Wednesday. So for me, he hasn't had his resurgence yet.
Yeah. But it's going back to this and seeing his style, it doesn't feel like you're being hit on the head with Tim Burton's style. It just feels like the right thing to do with this movie.
Yeah, it just feels like one that they must have had a blast just sitting down and going, like, okay, and then all of the artwork comes to life, and one of them is like, looks like a big claw spider thing. Like, it just, like, a bunch of kids just going, and then this happens, and then he has a horse carousel on his head. And it's like,
I would love to have seen, like, the creative team pitching ideas and drawing this stuff up. I mean, I guess Tim Burton would have sketched a lot of it because I think he's known for doing that. Probably. But it would be cool to do behind the scenes of that movie.
Yes, agreed. I'm just seeing, I'm pulling up his directorial output to see it, because Sweeney Todd was 2007, which I remember liking.
I liked it, yeah.
And then it's Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, which I remember being fine. The animated movie Frankenweenie, which I do actually remember being quite good.
I think I saw that and I liked it.
Big Eyes, which I think was fine.
I didn't see it. Miss
Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, which I don't remember anything about. And then live action Dumbo, which was,
oh, that did not do well.
Not good. Not even awful. Just like, what are we doing here?
I think that was like the part, like, I remember going to the cinema, and I feel like that's when a lot of people felt like they were just being dumped the same stuff, that it felt that you were just being hit on the head a lot. So
hopefully this is either going to be the beginning of a new creative whirlwind for Tim Burton, or it's just going to be him going, should I legacy sequel all my shit?
I would actually keep going to that. I really like Tim Burton. I just need breaks from him every now and then.
The next Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oof, yeah. How do you redo these? They're just
Edward
so
Scissorhands,
original.
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, no. Is Winona Ryder in that too? Or is that a different person? Okay.
Man, does he really just keep like burning through muses? Did we go Winona to Helena to
Johnny
Ortega?
Oh. I think when he finds a good actor who can give themselves to what he's looking for, he likes to reuse them. It's part of his look.
She very much is in Edward Scissorhands, which I have not seen in a very, 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 very long time.
It's a Halloween costume that's on my list of I must do this before I die. Is be Johnny Depp.
Big ol' Eddie Scissorhands?
Yeah. Have you done it?
No, I never dressed up like Eddie Scissorhands.
Why do you say that like that?
Because that's what he lets his friends call him. Eddie Sizz.
Oh.
Big Eddie Sizz, that's what we call him. No, I have never dressed. My Halloween costume output has stopped being. I've stopped putting effort in around the time I was like 9.
Okay, was that like a burn to me, or was that just like I've given
No,
up?
that was just me like saying to like I just don't put in the effort that some people do and that maybe I should.
Yeah, I like
Last
to
year I
go
put
hard.
a cowboy hat on and went, I guess I'm a got there. Done. Because the girls were like, you're not in a costume. So I just went, fine, done. I'm a
Ultimate
cowboy.
dad move.
And then it was too small for my head, so by house one, it was gone.
Last year was when I was Sarah Polley, and then I tagged her in it, and then she reshared my photo.
You know what you got to do this year?
What?
Jodie Foster.
Oh my God, I would die.
See if
Does
you
she have
can.
social media?
She doesn't
She
seem
strikes
like
me as
someone who
somebody who
would.
does not.
Yeah, that's true. So it'll be trickier. You're going to have to run through a few connections to get to her, but
She also seems like somebody who's like, oh, sweetie, be yourself.
that's also true. She would just give you an existential crisis instead of lifting you up. Sarah Polley would lift you up and be like, that's amazing. Well done. And yeah, Jodie Foster would be like, ugh, they say that flattery is the serious, what are the imitations, the serious, sincerest form of flattery, but I disagree.
Yeah. I'm not stepping into that zone of I don't want her to hate me.
But like, do one of her obscure roles, like be Jodie Foster in Flight Plan or something like that. I don't remember anything about Flight Plan, so I don't remember what you'd have to do. Probably
I'd
not
have to watch
much.
it. Yeah, I don't know it.
I'll stay tuned for our Flight Plan episode.
As I'm completely dressed up this
Yeah, that's our Halloween episode this year, Flight Plan. A movie I have zero memory of, other than I think it made a weird amount of money. Like it was just this bizarre, everyone saw Flight Plan.
I feel like that is just a Jodie Foster movie, though. Like, people just flood to it. They're like, what? This is happening? I need to see it.
Maybe one time. I don't know. Okay, something you're currently enjoying.
There's two things I want to give a shout out to. One of them is Superstore, which is on Netflix.
Yes,
I'm
that was
coming to
our
it.
pandemic comfort show.
Oh my God, I am falling in love with it so much. Like I'm burning through it. It's such a funny show about work and how to deal with it. The other thing I watched was a movie called The Zone of Interest, which won an award at the
It
Academy
won Best
Awards.
International Film, I believe.
Yeah, it was haunting. I don't know what to do with it, and it's gonna live in my brain for a little while.
I only got through half the nominees this year, and that was just one of the ones I did not get to. I know it's on Prime now, so I plan to, but
That's where I watched it, yeah.
because I think most of like Anatomy of a Fall is on there too, so I have a lot of
Oh
catching
my
up to do.
God, you have to watch this movie, Anatomy of a Fall.
I know I do.
Like, bring
Don't
it to the top
yell
of
at
your
me.
list. I recently watched that too, and I had to watch it in installments because it's quite long. It's like 3 hours. But oh my God, it's like probably the best written movie ever in the history of cinema. So go see it.
Pretty big claim considering you just watched Beetlejuice. So now I'm definitely intrigued. What should I shout out? Well, I'll shout it out because I wasn't sure if you were gonna. At the top, when I was like, oh, we saw a movie, that movie was Monkey Man. And
I
Monkey
knew you
Man
were gonna say
is
it, so I left it for
very,
you.
yeah, Monkey Man is one that, yeah, you should all go see Monkey Man. That's Dev Patel like starring and co-writing and directing. And I was reading about the production and it just sounds like a fucking nightmare, and that it's kind of a miracle that movie exists at all.
Why was it a nightmare? Just nobody wanted to make
Like
it?
a lot of it, they had to like film on their phones because like equipment didn't show that was supposed to show or it broke. He was saying like they had three breakaway tables. So when he would crash through the table, they would have to find all the bits and put the
Wow.
table back together because they had no budget to get more breakaway tables. Just stuff like
That's
that. Like
impressive.
it just sounds like the most, yeah, like down and dirty. We just got to get this done however we can. So it's kind of a miracle that it even came out. let alone turned out as well as it did. So yeah, get out there and go see Monkey Man. If anything, April is that month that goes against all of the people who are like, oh, everything's just remakes and sequels. Put your goddamn money where your mouth is and get out to the movies. Because right now you got Monkey Man, Civil War is coming out this week.
Love Lies Bleeding is still out. You should go see that.
Love Lies Bleeding, if you can find that somewhere. Yeah. The Spider, there's a Spider movie coming out called Sting, which I still don't get why it's called Sting. But then the Vampire Ballerina movie's coming out, Abigail, pretty soon. And then so there's a
Wicked
lot
Little
of
Letters. Wicked Little
Wicked
Letters.
Little Letters, I've heard, yeah, is very good. So there is a lot in your cinema right now, but you should also go see Godzilla versus Kong. Don't get me wrong about that.
I don't have that same sentiment.
If you're sitting around going, oh, if there's just superhero movies now and you don't go see any of these, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
And stop it. But then the next thing is always, well, these aren't movies I want to see. That's like seven things. Maybe you just don't like movies.
Maybe you just don't like storytelling and originality and happiness and feeling good about what you saw.
Yeah. Maybe you're Lydia. Maybe you're the Lydia in this situation, internet commenter.
Or maybe you're just the problem of most things and don't practice self-awareness.
Maybe that too. Either way, go see Monkey Man. So that's Beetlejuice. Thank you, Kim, for joining me here today. And of course, Kim's going to take us out with a classic quote.
That everybody knows.
Beetlejuice.
Everybody know when they hear Beetlejuice, they think of this line said by Catherine O'Hara, which is, oh, look, an indoor outhouse.
Don't even remember saying that. Oh, you know what? Perfect. No notes. Good night, everybody. So for all those things nostalgic, I ask them to